The World This Week. I'm Steve Young, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The Teton Dam in southeast Idaho was built to hold back a reservoir 17 miles long, totaling more than 2,100 acres in surface area. It had been controversial from the start, environmentalists arguing that the construction site was situated near a fault in the earth and therefore potentially subject to earthquake activity. Saturday, the dam burst. Several hundred square miles of land are underwater. So far, just a handful of fatalities, but as the waters recede, the known death toll is likely to rise perhaps substantially. Idaho Governor Cecil Andrus was soon on the scene.
The dam failed and the waters came with high velocity and high volume instead of in a normal flood stage where they creep up and spill over the banks. And it hit two communities of the state in just total devastating manner.
Eyewitnesses said it all started with a 10-foot hole at the base of the earthen dam. Cameraman Paul Jenkins of KID-TV witnessed animals in mass panic.
We watched a herd of cattle who had been frightened and stampeded and were running directly into the water. And they ran into the wall of water, and that's the last we saw of them.
Most people, fortunately, had enough warning time to reach high ground. Reporter Mel Richardson of KID-TV was on the foothills outside the worst-hit town, Rexburg.
We watched the wall of water come into the city, and I watched a house floating down the channel. It went 1 mile in 3 minutes. We timed it. 1 mile in 3 minutes. A full brick house just floating right down the channel. And as this wall of water came in, it just, houses and things, you know, just collapsed in front of them.
Loss of human life, livestock, property damage in the millions all lead in the aftermath to unanswered questions for Idaho and the rest of the nation. Should dams be built near geological faults? Should they be earthen dams? And of special interest to seismologists, are dams sometimes the cause rather than the victim of earthquakes? Some experts theorize that the huge weight of water artificially penned in can cause weakened subterranean structures to collapse. Syrian troops this week marched into Lebanon in an effort to bring peace between the warring Christian and Muslim factions who've been fighting for 14 months around the capital, Beirut. The probable outcome of that action assessed by CBS News correspondent John Sheehan.
There's certainly no guarantee that the Syrian intervention is going to bring about a stable ceasefire among the warring factions here. But even if it did, a ceasefire would leave Lebanon a long way from having solved its problems. Some way still has to be found to give Christians and Muslims an equal voice in government. And any negotiated end to the fighting would still leave this country bristling with weapons in the hands of the various private armies. Most of the gunmen who roam around here with everything from pistols to submachine guns to small artillery pieces seem to enjoy it. The gun is an obvious symbol of masculinity, and for most of these teenage warriors, it's as fascinating as a sports car. The war could end, but the Lebanese gunslinger might be harder to overcome. He could be as durable a figure as the American gunslinger after our own civil war. That's a problem for a country as small as Lebanon. It would be like taking the whole American Wild West and concentrating it in an area the size of Delaware. John Sheehan, CBS News, Beirut.
After meeting with UN Secretary General Kurt Waldheim, Secretary of State Henry Kissinger said the U.S. was not consulted in advance of the Syrian intervention, which it opposes. Britain, which loves its fish and chips primarily codfish, and Iceland, which has grown to hate British fishing ships, declared a truce of sorts this week, as Bob Dyke reports from London.
Government leaders in both London and Reykjavik praised the agreement, but some political opponents in both countries, as well as commercial fishermen, condemned the compromise. Leftists called it a sellout to NATO, and British trawlermen accused their government of caving in to Icelandic demands for fewer trawlers subject to tighter restrictions inside Iceland's self-declared 200-mile zone. But the British may be staking their own claim to a precedent. The common market of which Britain is a part is currently discussing the creation of its own 200-mile zone. And there are signs that the British may be thinking of demanding exclusive fishing rights within their share of the proposed limits. It is a claim that the British could not consider legitimately making if they were still pursuing a cod war with Iceland over that very same issue. Bob Dyke for CBS News, London.
Canada this week said that starting January 1st of next year, it will claim fishing jurisdiction out to 200 miles from its shores. The Canadian External Affairs Minister said the decision was made as a result of the extension of the U.S. fisheries jurisdiction in March of last year. What began in the dead of winter in New Hampshire will conclude this Tuesday in California, New Jersey, and Ohio, the 1976 presidential primary season. Correspondent Neil Strausser has the political scorecard.
For the Republicans, Super Tuesday looms as the 15th round of a heavyweight title bout. Both candidates have been shaken, but neither appears able to deliver the knockout punch before the fight goes to a decision. The judges in this bout will be the few hundred uncommitted delegates likely to hold the balance of power if, as expected, neither battler comes out of Ohio, New Jersey, and California with the convention majority. In the 14th round, Ronald Reagan scored the most points in the exchange over Montana, South Dakota, and Rhode Island, landing 2-1 for President Ford. But then the challenger himself slipped to the floor momentarily, as he admitted, with a hypothetical discussion of the possibility of sending some U.S. troops to Rhodesia. But then his handlers claimed low blow when the title holder's backers put on ads saying that Governor Reagan couldn't start a war, President Reagan could. In the Democratic ring, it's more like the final stage of a tag team wrestling match. Many of the contestants have been thrown out of the ring, but others keep coming at Jimmy Carter, who bested Morris Udall in South Dakota in the last round, but lost in Rhode Island and Montana to Jerry Brown and Frank Church, respectively. He could throw them out of the ring in Ohio and New Jersey next week. But if he doesn't, the referee, in the manner of pro wrestling scripts, is making motions of getting into the battle himself. His name is Hubert Humphrey. Neil Strauser, CBS News, Washington.
Humphrey, who has been lying relatively low, told CBS News correspondent Chris Kelly that right now Carter is more than 600 short of the total delegates needed to nominate. Humphrey said Carter might go to the Democratic National Convention with fewer than 1,200 delegates.
If, perchance, Mr. Carter should not do too well in these upcoming three primaries, that will mean that the convention is definitely an open convention. In other words, there will be no first ballot victory for anybody. That obviously would lend itself to my looking more favorably upon some positive action on my part.
What do you mean by positive action, sir?
Well, of looking for delegates, of becoming an active in seeking the nomination.
The Wayne Hayes controversy continues to simmer. The congressman, who has admitted having a personal relationship with Elizabeth Ray after putting her on the government payroll, partially acceded this week to mounting pressure from his Democratic colleagues.
Not wishing to have my name on a check which might be used by a political opponent as a campaign issue against some Democratic candidate, I have decided to call a meeting of the campaign committee for Wednesday, June the 9th, to ask that a temporary chairman be elected until a charge against me has been resolved. I've also decided to call a meeting of the Committee on House Administration next week to discuss with them any questions concerning my role as chairman of the House Administration Committee.
This week, Ms. Ray denied in an interview with Bernard Shaw a Chicago Tribune report saying she told investigators she was intimate with 13 congressmen, 2 senators, and White House photographer David Kennerly.
There are a lot of people, especially men in the Washington area, who are shaking in their boots, people who may have just had casual relations with you, and they're wondering where the next bomb is going to explode. How do you react to their fears? What would you say to the men you've known?
Well, have no fear, gentlemen. I will not do anything to hurt you.
Shaw reports that Kennerly, who is single, says he went out with Miss Ray once 2 years ago, and that was that. Graduation was held Wednesday at the United States Military Academy at West Point, and that was not that. The biggest cheating scandal in the point's history persists. The entire junior class has been held on post while an investigation continues. And that's The World This Week, produced by Phil Kierstead. This is Steve Young, CBS News.